Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Filibuster. The Scottish Star Wars has come out, Trainspotting 2, so we've got together a wee panel of experts on Edinburgh filmmaking to discuss this latest movie from Danny Boyle. So I'm Lee Hutchison as always, and I'm going to be joined today by Carly.
Hi.
And Ross.
Hey.
So when we have new guests, we always like to ask them their geek credentials, just get to know them. So Carly, tell us, what kind of nerd geek culture are you into, and what kind of caveat can you tell us about yourself?
Well, I have lots of brothers, so I grew up with all the kind of boy movies, I guess, and like all the typical Star Wars. I kind of like all movies. I have a big love of movies and love going to see movies, and I've started to make movies latterly, so that's all good fun. I don't really have any caveats. I think it's what you see is what you get.
Excellent. What about yourself, Ross?
We're
sitting in your apartment right now, and there's Star Wars toys, there's Star Wars curtains. It's, you know, the ultimate nerd paradise. So, you know, for the people that can't see that, tell us about your nerd geek passions.
Well, what it's like, if I had a time machine and my 12-year-old self, I was like, if I had the money as 12-year-old, what would I buy? So now that I'm, 28, something like that, so I just bought everything that 12-year-old would buy.
I'm the exact same at the moment. Yeah. Like, I'm 29 and I'm buying all the toys that I never had as a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm buying crap that my parents wouldn't have paid for. And it's like, oh, I can buy that now for £5 on eBay. I finally got it, young Lee. It's like, yeah. I'm spot on with that. It's such a cool geek room you've got here.
Oh, so nice one. Yeah.
It's the perfect for our Nerd Party HQ for today.
And none of this attracted me to him, by the way. Just put that in there. That's my caveat.
Is that your caveat?
No, I'm joking. Of course it did. I love the fact that you're a big geek and you love all your Star Wars. I came round to his flat for the first time and I saw his Atta and I was like, this is the guy for me.
Exactly. If you've got it takes your eye as soon as I came into the room and I saw it and I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. It's almost the size of me. So yeah, it's so good to have out here. So we've got some proper geeks on to discuss this movie. So before we kind of talk about Trainspotting 2, let's go back to the 90s. So what was the first experience you had with Trainspotting? Did you see it at the cinema? Did you watch it on video? What was your experience, Carly?
Well, for me, I was working in Japan at the time, and I'd picked up Trainspotting, the book, to take with me. So it was, I was saying to Ross the other day, it was a real head-fucky time, because I was speaking pidgin English in Japan, reading Irvine Welsh and Broad Scott. So it was a crazy, crazy time. And then came back and watched the movie, and just had been to Edinburgh and loved it. But when coming to Edinburgh off the back of seeing Trainspotting, I was terrified I was going to get stabbed by a junkie with a heroin needle. And when I first moved here, I went everywhere by taxi. I would literally come out of my house, get into a taxi, go from where I was going into a taxi back to my house, terrified to walk the streets because of Trainspotting.
Wow.
There you go.
There you go. And then when did you see the film for the first time? Was it like kind of the book, and then did you watch the film, or?
Yeah, I'd read the book first and loved it and really liked this nice, fresh, sort of vibrant writing, very sort of gritty and sort of coming into that real life and very similar to life in London where everyone would be taking drugs and, you know, doing their thing and that kind of culture around that, to having this in a book was just so groundbreaking and just so fresh and intelligent. And I can't even remember when I saw the film. I can't remember if I went to a cinema, or if I saw it on video. Gosh, going back so long now. I think Ross has a better story about watching it, because you watched it at the Cameo.
Yeah, we went to the premiere, yeah. So it was a van of us, like really old school, like white van, like think about 10 of us piled in. But we're a bit late. We had tickets, obviously, but it's not like assigned seating and stuff like that. So we're all down the front with carryouts and stuff like that. So it felt true to the film that you're watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And what was your experience like watching it for the first time in the Cameo?
It was just like watching like your mates that you knew, to be honest. Not that my mates were heroin addicts. I've put that caveat in there. But you know, there was so much. It was a lot of specific humour to very specific Edinburgh. Give you a real feel of Edinburgh. And it was good to actually see a picture where you're so used to like seeing like London films or New York films, and you always wonder, like, are they actually true to what New York is, or are they true to what London is? And then seeing that, you're like, that really got what Edinburgh was like, you know. So it actually added to a lot of other films that you'd seen, I think.
Yeah, like I never grew up in Edinburgh. Like, I lived up in Aberdeen, and right. I think like how most of my kind of generation saw it was like, I think everyone's dad had it on video.
All right.
And yeah, we'd watch it kind of like early teens, like, oh, Trainspotting. And I think a few of us were put off watching it first because of the title. We thought, well, it can't be that interesting and right, stuff yeah. like that. And then you just watch the first thing, you think, holy hell, it's...
Well, yeah, Noel Gallagher said he didn't want to... he didn't, like, release one of his songs for it because he thought it was literally... Yeah. He took the title literally.
And it was watching it and it just exploded. Like, it was so instantly quotable. Like, to see Scotland represented in film in a modern way as opposed to kind of, you know, Battle of Bannockburn, all these
exactly,
sorts of things
yeah,
in the 90s.
Yeah,
it was
yeah.
so cool to see Scotland as a vibrant, amazing place, even if it was... the junkies' perspective.
Yeah, that adds a vibrance, doesn't it? I mean, like,
yeah. Absolutely, yes.
It's quite real life, I think, because it must be quite different for you two growing up here in sort of, you in Edinburgh, Ross, and then you in sort of Aberdeen. And Aberdeen and Edinburgh, I suppose, are quite similar in that, with having that
yeah.
drug problem. But, like, for me, growing up in London, again, quite different. So what was it like for you seeing that represented on the screen, like, properly?
Yeah. It was pretty alien to me, because I lived in the countryside, and, like, the most you would ever see of people doing drugs was maybe smoking weed.
Okay.
It was like kind of the idea of heroin addicts was something you thought, oh, surely not. And it seemed to be a reputation that Edinburgh, I think, really picked
yeah.
up from the
yeah.
film, that, you know, I think Leith and Hibs in particular kind of were tarred with that reputation for years. Like,
yeah.
you go to the football and it wasn't Hibs, it was the HIVs. And I think you have to remember at the time, was it Edinburgh was the HIV capital?
That's
of,
right, yeah.
Was
yeah.
it Europe,
Europe
Britain?
Yeah.
It was shocking. And, you know, you're talking about this idea, oh, I had to get a taxi everywhere, I was so scared. You know, I can't imagine what it must have been like to be like an adult having a sex life, a life in Edinburgh, and thinking, oh, I wonder if this person's a junkie. Well, you know,
yeah.
you know, safe sex, all these sorts of things. How much the film would have tainted,
yeah.
you know, living in Edinburgh. It's, as much as it's kind of a pride now, oh, Trainspotting is Scottish based, I can imagine it being kind of like a slur somewhat on the city.
Well,
yeah.
it's interesting that the fact that, you know, that's a lot of American cinema girls, probably the first. Like kissed a band with Edinburgh, and that they think that, like, you know, you're going to get stabbed by junkies and things
yeah.
like that. That portrayal must be, it's like Amity Island, you know, where
yeah.
there's going to be sharks
there's
everywhere.
Shot, yeah.
yeah.
Well, I came from London, so you know, and I was
well,
used
it's not
to
like
walking
you came
the
from
streets.
The back,
I didn't
yeah.
come, yeah, I didn't come from, you know, the countryside and riding my bike along. I came from, not that I even came from the mean streets
yeah.
either, but. Definitely really cultural to come here and think, oh my gosh, it's full of junkies and they're gonna get me and stuff.
But it was all wittily done though, that's what I like
yeah.
about it, which I thought was quite accurate.
like,
yeah.
and I think was quite funny as well, is like it's classed as it's an Edinburgh film, but apart from the first few minutes where they're running down Princes Street
yeah.
and waving, like, it's all Glasgow, Glasgow, Glasgow.
yeah.
I remember sitting in a pub, I think when it was like 19, and it was like, this seems recognisable. And they went, oh, this is the pub Begbie chucks the glass down.
yeah.
the glass. Oh, fuck, so it is and stuff. It was a quite a culture. Shot
yeah,
when you're like, because I'd never really knew Edinburgh. I was like, oh, I knew bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was kind of, I was like, oh, it's mostly Glasgow. Oh,
yeah,
oh, that's a bit disappointing.
Spoils a myth,
yeah.
Yeah. So did you? You know, it's one of those films. I think everyone's probably ended up seeing it, kind of video countless times and stuff
yeah.
like that. So going into when the film was finally officially announced, after everyone for about 20 years asking him, are you going to make Trainspotting 2?
Yeah.
Are you going to make Porno, as it was kind of the book was called?
Yeah.
What was your kind of anticipation when it was finally announced this is going to happen? Like, that's finally going to be on the big screen. Were you excited, nervous? You were thinking, I don't want them to maybe taint the original.
Uh-huh.
What was your kind of expectations of Trainspotting 2?
Well, I think the new Star Wars film, like, dispelled a lot of... because so many films that have come after, like, such length of time have been appalling. And then you're like, oh, please, no. But then Star Wars, obviously The Force Awakens.
Not The Phantom Menace.
No, again, The Force Awakens. And there was like, the entire world just collectively went, oh.
Yeah,
so when it was announced, I was like, Danny Ball's a clever guy. He's not going to make some... And he's, you know, his star's rising, still rising. It's not like he needed the money or anything like that.
Or any of them did either.
Yeah, so it didn't feel
that.
Like, you know, the Moody Blues getting back together or anything like that. No.
Stones were touring again.
yeah, you could tell he wouldn't make it unless he wanted to make it. And he's a pretty clever filmmaker. So
yeah.
that's what I was kind of looking forward to, just to see what they did with it, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think they all felt really all of the cast, like Ewan McGregor, you could tell he was itching to make it and reprise that character. And and even, you know, Robert Carlyle and Ewan Bremner as well, to get back on screen together and reprise those roles. I think as an actor, when something has made you and really put you on the map, and then to be able to revisit it and go back, must just, as an artist, must just be such a fantastic thing to be able to do. So it felt like there was that energy around it, and like you're saying with Danny Boyle, like, yeah, he was, you know, it kind of put him on the map as well. And he was
how did you feel? What did you think?
Well, he was an Oscar-winning director, so I had 100% trust in that he would pick a right movie. Like, he doesn't have to go back and make a sequel to this movie.
No, no.
He's got, like, my full trust. And when it was announced that he was coming back, the whole cast were coming back, it was such a relief. And it kind of never bothered me that it was 20 years, because I always thought when it was at the 10-year mark, that's when the sequel to the book is. It's 10 years, so it fits.
Yeah.
It's not like they've just went, oh, we're going to go do one.
Yeah, exactly.
Movie's a success, let's go back to that well. So it felt like 20 years, it was like, kind of really quite
sensical,
yeah. So I was really anticipating it, and the fact of kind of seeing them all back together again, I kind of had total faith in it, and I just went into lockdown. I was like, I don't want to know the story.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to
well.
Do.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we didn't read any reviews or anything.
Yeah, I think the only thing I knew kind of before I saw the film for the first time was that I'd seen some of the filming taking place, so I had kind of ideas in my head of things that might happen.
Yeah.
Like, we're recording this just like a stone's throw away from one of the characters' apartments, Veronica.
Yeah.
Just literally up the street from here. And
I thought I recognised that. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Montpellier.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I popped up the street to get some milk, and as was kind of the story, I think, for most people in Edinburgh at the time, they walked in on Trainspotting filming, and you saw Johnny Lee Miller and the actress, I can't remember her name, recorded playing Veronica, and he was shouting at her, and you saw Danny Boyle kind of directing them.
Uh-huh.
And they had the big lighting rigs outside, and they turned the downstairs into a Chinese takeaway.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But you don't see that on the big screen, and it was just like all these school kids from the rich school, what's it called?
Watsons,
yeah, they were all there going, what's this movie? It's all like, oh, it's Trainspotting. What's that? They're just like that kind of, so ignorant. But there's people just watching it, like, taking photos. And
yeah, I worked on Princess Street, and they were filming in the, is it?
Urban Outfitters?
Yeah, they were filming there, but they had equipped it out like it was a computer shop.
Yes.
Even though it's right next to a computer shop.
Absolutely. They turned it into an Apple shop, because I was going to London that day. And
was that in the film? No, I didn't see that at all.
No, I was expecting that. I was like, oh, they turned it into an Apple shop, even though, as
there's
you say,
one at the end.
It's literally
the
other end of Princess Street. And I was waiting for that in the film. So kind of, apart from that, I kind of was just in lockdown. I didn't want to know the story, where they were. So yeah, it was much hype for it. So
there's a lot of pride, I think, with everyone in Edinburgh, because they were going around and felt really included in the whole filming process.
Yeah.
That Trainspotting, it's kind of our thing, you know, it's our film, it's Edinburgh. So it was quite a nice time, because remember, you would post stuff on social media, like you would walk past somewhere, and it was really like quite a nice, like, oh, look at us, we're in Trainspotting too, although we weren't.
No, but I think it's a really good point you make,
actually.
Yeah, because
you feel
part
of it.
Yeah.
And was there any chances for you? You were saying you do, like, filmmaking. Was there any opportunities for you to go on set? Like, was there anything like that available to kind of local talent? And
there seemed to be loads afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I could have got you on Trainspotting too. Or, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. We were chatting away with these guys. So it was like, oh, that's really great to know.
Nothing more frustrating after the fact, is there?
After that, and there was, like, I was making a little film for a charity, and the guy there was like, oh, we were, you know, we could get you into the Trainspotting set. And it's like, I am still being quite precious about it, just really enjoying making my own things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be able to have to walk in somewhere and go, hi, I'm Carly, I'm making this, I was in Trainspotting, I was a runner on Trainspotting. So I want to be able to go in, hi, I'm Carly.
Yeah.
Watch this, please.
I wouldn't have done that. I would have just been like this. Hi, I was in I got Danny Boyle's coffee one day. You know, oh, I wiped Ewan McGregor's ass one day for him and stuff. It was
I might do that for nothing. But
just one day.
Yeah. And, like, I know the premiere was literally at the bottom of the street as well. So that
we
was
walked past it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, we ended up getting, like, wristbands to, like, be on, like, kind of at the side of the red carpet. And, like, the guys just couldn't have been nicer to people. Like,
oh, nice.
Ewan McGregor was quite amusing. Like, the person next to me was, like, got a selfie with him. And he was just doing this little dance on the red carpet. It was an orange carpet. And he went to her, oh, how do you get the flash to work on that iPhone like that when it's like turned around the other way? She went, oh, well, this is the button here. You press, oh, thank you so much. I've been trying to work out how to do that. And he was just being really personal about like a bit of tech.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he just kind of danced away and kept going down and signing everything. And all of them stopped for you, would take photos.
It's a big moment for them as well, because yeah. I watched them on Graham Norton, and you know, him and Danny Ball fell out over the beach and stuff like that. And Danny Ball was like really welling up when they were talking about it. And there was, you can tell that there's such an affection between them all. Because for all of them, that was the start of their careers.
Yeah.
And each and every one of them, I mean, Danny Ball was his second film, I think.
Well, but Carlisle seemed to be, he'd just done the Full Monty, so he was out there a bit more. But I guess he was like the biggest name.
Was he Hamish Macbeth before then as well?
He was, yeah.
So he was like the big name. And it's funny to think how they, all their careers, grew, like in different levels.
Was Spud not, like, did he not play Renton in the original
stage play? Yeah, that's right.
So it was really interesting just, because they must have really done a lot of time on the red carpet, because someone posted a picture of like 5 and it wasn't until like 7 or 7:30 that they were all starting to go in.
Yeah, it was about 5 o'clock. Yeah, then they did that, and then 7:30 was the film, but it was so frustrating. Like, you pop down in the morning, you could get bands. So I got my band, and a friend got one later in the day, and it was so frustrating because at the end of the night they went, if you've got bands 1 to 35, here's a ticket to go in and see the night with the cast. And I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. I'm number 40. I'm nailed on. They went, number 1 to 35. I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, no,
I was like, and then they went, oh, it's quite good. Some people aren't here that are in the team's number. Oh, I'm definitely guaranteed now. And then the guy went, I tried to cover up the 0, and I went, oh, I'm number 4. He pulled up my sleeve, and I was like,
I'm from Edinburgh.
Yeah, exactly. I stay across the street. I got up at my bed at 7:30 to pop across. And then you started handing them out randomly to like some people, and I was like, but I've got a lower down number than that. And I was like, so, and I was like, this was a great night. I got to meet the cast, but it was so close to being perfect. So I had to see it with the rest of
the scum. Put your ear to the wall and everything.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, now I've got to watch with the rest of the scum on Friday and everything like that. So I suppose that takes us to kind of our first time seeing it. So how did you guys watch it for the first time? Was it the Cameo?
Yeah,
or?
Cameo.
Yeah, what's the Cameo? Yeah.
Like, what's, you know, earliest time can we see it with us finishing work on Friday? And it was quite a bizarre experience because it's the first time I've ever gone to the Cameo, and it was chaos.
Yeah.
It was absolute chaos. Uh-huh. There seemed to be like a Spanish group visiting, and they were all kind of vale, vale around you. And I felt like I was in Spain at one point and being hurdled along. Still have our numbers because we were like branded like cattle, where we were sort of being shuttled into.
Because we used to go to the Cameo, because the Cameo is like my favourite cinema, just because it's the whole ambience is, it's fantastic. You can get a beer, you can take a beer and stuff like that. Really, I like the seats, the, you know,
it's traditional, it's, as well,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's that, but it's the first time you could tell they were like going, oh my god, how do we handle this? There's like so many people, and they did well, to be honest.
They did really well. We've been to midnight showings there as well.
Yeah,
we went
exactly,
to midnight side of Star Wars,
which
we thought, this is going to be crazy, and it wasn't. And then this Trainspotting was, there was the energy.
Apart from the guy
there
versus Chewbacca having a fag out, so
nothing says Scotland more than Chewbacca.
But the energy was really quite exciting.
Yeah,
it was
a fantastic environment
to
watch it. Yeah,
because the film house was sold out all Friday. Cineworld was all sold out Friday, and like,
it's incredible.
That's what you usually get for Star Wars or a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
So that was,
well, it's like you said in your introduction. You know, it's the Scottish Star Wars kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you watched it for the first time, like as we were saying, we were all kind of in lockdown. You know, we'll go into the characters in a wee bit. What did you think of the story? Was it what you expected? You know, what was kind of your reaction to that?
I think it's so hard to break it down because it's been a couple of days now, and I came out and I was like, oh, I was a little bit disappointed with that. And then you think, why are you disappointed? This is a film that's been taking 20 years to like to be made, and all these casts are together, and knowing how films are made, I felt really ungrateful to be disappointed by it. But it seemed to kind of start really good. I feel like it peaked and it was going to be amazing, and there was so many like giggles and, you know, so much nostalgia in it. And then to come out, remembering coming out feeling like, oh, thought they could have done more with that. That was my initial thing. And now, you know, a few days I've been able to sort of digest it. I'm going, yeah, it was a great film.
So you were saying that you wish they had done more with that.
Yeah,
what
but
do you
I
wish
don't
they
know
maybe
what
done?
More
yeah.
we were trying to talk about.
It was like a caper movie. It was like, you know, Ocean's 11 and a half.
That's what you said that. You went, it's like Ocean's 11.
And the thing is, it's beyond critique, though. That's the thing. I was watching it going, like you were trying to allude to there. It's like it's beyond critique. You're watching it and you're like, this is more of an experience rather than a movie that you're watching. Because there is so much that you bring with you to watch it. So you, like, I mean, there's a reason we're talking about this in such enthusiastic terms. And it's more like an experience to be there, and it's like going to see, you know, a band getting back together almost.
Yeah.
Rather than, and then your critical faculties kind of, I mean, I even had like, they threw in some heroin just for some gags.
Yeah.
you're like,
yeah. They never went anywhere, did it? It was like, we took heroin, you thought, oh, this is a chance for oh, no, that's just,
no,
the
it's just
of
a,
it, yeah.
just a nod to the past, you know, let's have some heroin
gratuitous
in here.
Heroin.
Where you're like, the first film had, it had the wit to it, and it had that sort of camaraderie, but it was a dark movie. It was a dark film.
Yeah.
Whereas this was, you know, Danny Ocean. You know, let's get the band back together.
Because I think people often think of the first one, oh, it's a kind of really good, funny comedy. But you forget,
no,
there's
not.
A baby that dies in it.
Yeah.
One of their best friends dies of heroin over there. It's a pretty grim film.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I didn't know what I was kind of expecting going into the film. The trailers don't really give much away of kind of the plot or storylines.
No.
You just see them kind of, oh, hi, and some flashes of images.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So I kind of went in, I was like, at the beginning, I was like, okay. They're kind of, the plot line seemed to kind of jar with Robert Carlyle, was quite a bit slapsticky at the beginning.
It was. It was almost like he became, like, we were saying, like Michael Myers, you know. I expected a chainsaw to come out at some point.
And, like, this guy escaped from prison. Oh, that's quite funny. And then, he's just, like, hanging out at his house.
No one came to get him back.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and the original film, he's a brutal, horrible person.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas now he's like Michael Myers, you know.
And he's always the character. Everyone goes, oh, he's the funniest guy in the first movie. It's like, no, he's pretty despicable.
Anyone who grew up in Edinburgh who's met a kind of guy like that, it's not funny at all.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I kind of went in and I thought... Oh,
did you like it though? What?
I really liked it. And I think I've liked it more since then.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Like, I think it's so hard to... You go into these movies and I think... They can be overwhelming. Like you let things go. You don't review them objectively. You think,
of course.
Like there's flaws with the plot, and I think. But what I quite liked was that it was almost the anti-Trainspotting in a way,
in the fact
that it kind of, it tapped into the nostalgia of kind of disappointment with life, and there was almost this idea that I felt. This is 20 years and I felt all those 20 years in the characters and I thought that they replaced the kind of, you watch Trainspotting and you were saying it's a quite a grim film and you watch and there's kids' death, it's horrible, but it kind of seems quite carefree, the characters, that they're doing drugs, there's very little consequences, it feels like, to them personally, that happens to others around them. And it's an enjoyable movie. People, when they quote Trainspotting, they don't quote, say something. They're quoting funny lines or, you know, Robert Carlyle.
It's romanticised, isn't it?
100%.
We've kind of gone like, oh, this was Edinburgh, this is our time. You know, we're listening to Oasis, we're like taking drugs, and it's all this kind of, it's our kind of 60s all tied up in that film. And
it got
and
friendship
sort of
really
culture.
Well as well.
Yes.
Like, your loyal friends, even though... You all acknowledge the huge faults in each other and stuff, but you're still friends.
Do you mean this one or do you mean the original?
I think the original, but I think that's why
they were proper scumbags who, you know, they kind of had that friendship, but they, like,
well, Renton stole
had
all the money.
He had no qualms in, you know, turning his friends over for himself.
Well, that's what
I think they would have done as well,
Yeah, he's annoyed that he didn't.
Exactly.
That's why he says, you owe me 1,600 quid, because he would have stolen it himself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, it tapped into kind of the disappointment, as opposed to, I thought, and it could have easily been like a fatter, greyer version of Trainspotting, where it's a bunch of folk in their 40s, late 40s, still doing, smacking around and all that sort of stuff. And it's like, nothing's really changed, and you feel that these people have been alive for 20 years.
Yeah,
sometimes
with that,
you watch like a movie, maybe kind of like Star Wars, like Han Solo, all these people, it's been 20, 30 years since you last seen them.
Yeah.
And you don't really feel that maybe that's been there. Like, you go, oh, we've got a kid, but you never kind of feel that
they had a relationship.
They're just
like
you're told they are there. With that, you feel that kind of hope, disappointment, frustration.
I think Danny Boyle needs a lot of credit for that as well, because, you know, like, just using the physicality of the film. For example, when he comes in, he's playing pool and it's a shit pub and there's just one guy drinking. And that told the whole story of what his last 20 years has been,
just
in that visual, rather than having to go explanation-wise, you know, this is what I've been up to.
Absolutely.
Well, he was a total chancer, wasn't he? Sick boy, he was just that. And he was like, I know guys like that who have, like, they're in their 40s now, and I've because I moved away from London in my 20s, and when I go back to London, that's the kind of people I visit that haven't, you know, mounted to these great things that they were, you know, all setting off at their 20s, choose life and all that. They haven't amounted to that. They're still doing the same things. They're still playing pool in a back end pub, you know, still being that same person, but in that same life, in that same town, in that same...
So just
that,
even that number of the really money, 16 grand, like they thought that was their Eldorado, you know. They
it was back here. Then, though. That's absolutely. 16 grand then was, woohoo, you know.
I know, like you watch it and you just think, oh, that worth falling over there, here's your 4 grand. Where's the interest on that?
The whole thing you went through for, just to get it.
Absolutely, yeah. Like I thought that was really interesting, and I liked how it played on kind of, it acknowledged that kind of Trainspotting happened, but the people kind of moved on, not moved on, and like the bitterness of kind of that day is still kind of like that life's kind of left them behind.
Well, the fact that the sick boy still got all those videos and stuff like that, I mean, he's living in the past where he assumed to be his best time of his life.
Yeah, because I don't think you do change that much from your 20s anyway. Like you're saying, you just get the money to buy all the toys you wanted when you were 12. Yeah. So it's like you don't, unless you just sort of go off and you massively travel, but those characters haven't. They've stayed in the same places, they've stayed in the same town, they've been the same, you know, doing that Groundhog Day. And
although I think Spud was the one that sort of progressed the most. I really like that angle.
Spud,
what did you think of that?
Like, you look at Spud at the beginning, you think he's the one that's not moved on.
Yeah.
That he's, things have moved on for him, that he's got a kid with Gail, but he's still just like a smackhead in like a high-rise apartment, and life has kind of stayed the same for him.
Yeah.
And but by the end, he's the one that really has changed the most.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I thought it was quite well done. Yeah.
Whereas the other ones, you can still imagine by the end of the movie, Begbie is still just this horrible guy.
Yeah.
The Renton and Sick Boy have kind of regressed back to that kind of, they've got over their.
Well, they become more childlike as the film goes on, don't they? Yeah.
And I think that's like kind of the charm of it, that I think everything's moved on in life, but these people really kind of haven't.
Yeah.
And I think Edinburgh's the biggest change in that. That it kind of ties into that kind of, they want to redevelop this pub.
Yeah.
And like Edinburgh from the 90s, where it's this HIV capital, people are scared to go on attack. It's become a, you know, this gentrified, globalised city.
Because that's what it says, gentrification has been here.
Cool,
And you think of like the first movie where you've got the American that comes in, like, oh, can I use your toilet?
Bathroom?
Yeah, like that's like the rare exception. And there's nowadays that's people that are kind of, you know, trapped in the past, like they just look around Edinburgh and it's all this new development, it's business, investment, Starbucks, and it's quite fascinating to see that it's all moved on. Like, you know, when Begbie goes, oh, we didn't have those choices in the day where it was like hospitality management, all they had to do was just drugs, and that was a lifestyle in itself.
I thought it was a nice nod, like you said, with the Spud character, like back to Irvine Welsh, and almost explained Trainspotting, like how it came about, how, because obviously he wasn't involved in the script writing of T2, so it was nice that they gave him a big nod and almost like a thanks to him at the end of it, by, this was his stories, this is, you know, someone said to him, these would make really good books, you should write these down. It's like, oh, I should write these down. And that's, it's almost like it went the full circle for me, in that this is how, you know, this 20 years ago happened, because someone said to this, you know, junkie, write these down and make this amazing story known.
It's one thing to say that Irvine Welsh can't really act too well. Did you recognise him as a little cameo part?
No.
You know the guy that...
he's a guy in the garage.
Yeah, that Begbie sells the TV to.
Oh,
the bald guy.
Yeah,
that's Irvine Welsh. So there we go. So we'll kind of dive into the characters and we'll kind of take some of the plot. So what did you think of Renton? Was that where you expected him to be after 20 years, you know, in Amsterdam and returning back to Edinburgh?
You go first,
because you know, when he moves to London in the first film, and he's like, you know, he's getting into real estate and stuff like that. So he always had that sort of aspirational kind of, but aspirational is maybe the wrong word. I always thought he was the one that could fit in proper society better than the rest of them. He's more chameleon like than the rest of them. So I could imagine him go into Amsterdam, having some like mid level job, getting married, but the whole time in his brain going, man, I wish I was just getting on it again.
Absolutely.
He's that kind of guy.
But how can you stay in Amsterdam with the history of being an addict and not take drugs? You'd have to.
Well, it's like people who vape and don't smoke anymore.
Yeah.
But I can imagine like renting just like smoking weed or something.
Yeah, exactly.
In a cafe, and that's perfectly acceptable to him, as opposed to kind of, you know, you can indulge somewhat in drug use there, was like, here's not really, can't really just sit in a cafe and stuff like that.
What did you think?
I really liked him, but it was one of those ones that I was at the beginning like, why is this guy come back and stuff like that. I felt like there was no need for him to come back.
Yeah.
And then that moment where he's like, oh yeah, like I had a wife and it all kind of fell apart. And I think the Amsterdam part was maybe a bit too rushed. You kind of see him like working out.
With the long hair.
And then it's just like, oh, he's back in Edinburgh and it feels like, oh, that it didn't feel kind of...
And the fact that his mum had died previously as well. But then I guess it goes to the selfishness of the person. Like, his mum died, he didn't come back, he nearly died, so then it's important for him to come back.
Yeah.
Maybe that was it. But
they did try and explain it, and by saying that he's got to, like, he's had the heart problem, and he's, like, got this guilt, and he's had to come back and, you know.
But I agree with you, they could have maybe. But then you don't really signpost it too much, do you?
Yeah.
The main thing is he's just coming back.
Exactly. It's just like, here's the plot. Like, it's almost like one of those ones, if you watched it as like a TV series, it's going, they ended with him that he's just off to like leaving, and 5 minutes later he's back in Edinburgh. It's like that TV show.
Exactly.
We've had the like the cold opening. By the mid credits, he's already.
Plus, we'd be sitting now going, if it had been differently, we'd be sitting for, why did they spend 15 minutes in Amsterdam?
There's like a prequel movie out there somewhere, just like kicking about watching the football.
Yeah.
But, and I think the scene where he's like having dinner with his dad and like you see the shadow of his mum at the table.
That was brilliant. That was really well done. Yeah, that was really well done.
But no, it was good to, like, I really like. Renton's kind of the straight guy and stuff like that. I don't think Renton's anyone's favourite character.
Yeah.
He's just. And a character that kind of brings everyone together. Like,
well, you need these centre posts, doesn't he, for everything to come
Everyone
out.
Else can be more outrageous by the fact that he's the straight guy and encourages everyone else, and you can get away with that. Without him, it's totally unrealistic.
But he's a flawed guy as well. I mean, he's a flawed character as well, so he's not like, you know...
Well, he's still screwed his friend over in this as well, doesn't
he? Yeah,
so,
he sleeps with his girlfriend. I mean.
Yeah, so it's interesting to see what Ewan McGregor thought of Renton, because we all have our own, you know, ideas, because he's, you know, he's unique to us, what we think, and from all those years ago. So it was interesting to see what Danny Boyle and Ewan McGregor thought of Renton and what he would be now and where he would be and, you know, what he's still like as a person. Has he grown? Has he changed? And not very much from his original screwing everyone
over. And as you say, like, it is, you know, people don't necessarily change from their 20s to their 40s. So it's not like he's had more maybe experiences, but he's still probably the same guy he was much and such when he was
Young. He kept the beef off. I mean, that's the
exactly. I suppose working out with lightsabers will do that but no, I thought he was a really interesting role. I didn't really necessarily buy into the relationship he had with Veronica. Like, I thought that was a bit kind of
They could tell they're like attracted to each other, because she's, I mean, a beautiful woman and he's a, but then I didn't get the, you know, the pillow chat and stuff
was
like that.
Was that not a nod though back to the original, where he was with the younger girl, and when she even said to him, she passed the baton on and went, you know, she's too young for you, and of course, because she could see how he's looking into it.
Exactly,
it was that whole young man, younger woman.
And I liked as well, like, kind of, you had the, in the first movie, you've got that choose life and everything, like, it's quite optimistic and stuff. That kind of, with this one, it seems really bitter. Like, he's in the
choose life and it's
I think what is he? Is it what's the name of the shopping place that he's in? Is it Jenner's or something like that? This overlooking St Andrew's Square. Well, they're having
Harvey Nicks.
Yeah. They're having the meal in there
with the champagne. And
I think they're like there twice in the movie and stuff like that. So I think we know that he's invested some of his money in shares there. But like he comes across so bitter, and he's just raising his voice. Choose life, and it's just disappointment. It's horrible. It's shit.
Yeah.
And I think that was quite an interesting contrast, because I think like the whole choose thing, so many people had that as a student.
You went into so many people's houses and there it is, you know, framed.
And I thought that was an interesting turn to show that he has just become a bit bitter and stuff, that life just hasn't turned out the way
Think that's true though, because I could identify with it, with definitely like being in social media, working in social media and being online. You know that people have like posting and they're getting so much gratification from being online, but it's not actually real life. So I like that they updated that monologue, and I like that they sort of put that contemporary twist on it, that this is what everyone's feeling. Everyone, there is this kind of like unhappiness about all this Snapchat,
but it still
Instagram
had that great gallows humor about it though.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I think made the first film so popular and makes this one successful. It's still the humour about it, you know.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, they're 20 years on, and he goes, "Oh, Mark, where have you been for the last 20 years?"
Yeah.
I mean, that there's like wit in that, and so there's not like, there's no bitterness to it. There's disappointment, but then disappointment with humour, I think, works really well.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think it was a very interesting character, and it was good to like be back in that thing again. Like, it kind of gives you hope that if you're a good person, perhaps in your 20s, you'll still be carrying that joy. Yeah, but if you're a mess like now, you probably could just forget it. You're doomed.
Yeah.
So, you know, someone that not necessarily has changed, what about Sick Boy? What do you think of Simon now? Sick Boy's dead.
Yeah,
Simon lives.
Yeah,
I like that character. Actually, he was my, aside from Spud, he was my second favourite. And I liked his life. I just thought he gave a lot of energy to it. And he was still that kind of, still looking for his next big kind of,
he hasn't changed at all.
No,
I mean,
he was looking to make the next bit of money.
I liked
it.
Who
are
you? I'm your blackmailer.
Exactly. The idea that he would be doing revenge porn, it was just like straight away, I was like, 100%, I'm on board with that. I could just imagine him just.
The fact he's eating noodles watching it as well.
Yeah. You could just imagine that's like, he gets his kick from that,
exactly.
Bit of money and stuff like that. And I thought, oh, 100%. It seemed like as soon as you watched that, you thought, I can buy in that this is what he's
been
doing.
And it's always I'm doing this for the next thing. I want the big brothel, I want the...
Yeah.
And then he had the...
grand plans.
Yeah, the notorious Hibs Casual, who played the guy, what was his name?
Oh,
who went to him, do you think you're going to get away with this?
Yeah, I think
there was no thought to it at all.
No, I think that guy, actually, he also runs the boxing club.
That's right, it's Malcolm.
I remember going to that boxing club once.
Downneath,
I think it was based originally at the time when I went, was kind of down in Gorgie. And I think it's moved now. But I remember being there and just like, oh, this guy was just like a taskmaster and just like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think he was screaming at me to like punch harder. I'm a scrawny guy and I'm like, okay, what are you doing? Stuff like that. I was watching the film and I went to my mate.
That's the
box. And he was like, oh, yeah.
I watched the documentary. He was really like sort of erudite, really witty sort of guy. So you could see why he played that character. I thought it was good in the film.
He's a better actor than Irvin Welsh as well. So,
I think the chair next to him was a better actor.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it was so good to see Sick Boy was one of my favorites because he's just absurd and like his approach and all that sort of stuff. And
he still dresses like coquettishly, you know, he's got like slip ons.
And dye in the hair.
Yeah,
as
with
well.
The toothbrush
and
stuff.
It was interesting.
I think he's the atypical Edinburgh guy and stuff, especially more so in the first one. You look at him and you think, oh, that's the classic Edinburgh person. It kind of talks with a bit of highfalutin in the accent, talks in popular culture, but really is just a bit of a fraud in a way like that. I'm so much better than these other junkies. Like, you can almost imagine
that's
like Glasgow.
That's
it's just a bit of fun for me. I could
play
at any point and stuff
I've
like that.
I've got a business there, apparently.
Yeah.
So we're saying about where Sick Boy lived, and I was watching it every time they did like an exterior shot. I was like, who is that? And he's saying it's not real.
The pub?
No, not the pub, the flat, and they're the big tip, the big scrap.
Oh, no, I think that is real. It's down, I've seen that place before, I can't remember the name of Tom Ed. It's down kind of, it is in Leith, and it's kind of probably not far off Constitution Street.
Okay.
There's a big scrap heap there, and there are those apartments stuff that are overlooking a scrap
heap. It just cost me 10 grand, man.
Did you just have a wee bet on it?
Yeah.
I started off with 50 pence, but with the 10 grand pretty quickly.
100% real.
Shit.
I'll get you the name later on.
I figured it, because it just looked too real to be, why would you CGI something like that when there are places like that? And I like the fact that it kind of said everything. His flat was nice inside, but you came out and it was a complete and utter, dump.
Mm. I think the only time I know it's real, because I passed by it once and I just thought, there's these apartments. I was like, imagine if we're looking at scrap.
Yeah.
So yeah, 100% a real place.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't figure out where Renton's house was. I couldn't work out if that was like Silvernows or Carricknow or something like that.
It reminded me of where my mate Blair lives.
Down at Leith, is that Leith?
Yeah, just off Leith Links.
Uh-huh.
There's places like that up there.
I'd imagine it would be, to fit in with the story, would have been Muirhouse or something like that, but I don't think there's anywhere like that around there either.
That's what I liked about the humour of it, though. There's a lot of gags about Sight Hill,
about
Muirhouse. And,
well,
so
because
like,
I live in Granton, and I was like, oh,
because that's where Gail's house
up.
is the Granton is just down the street from the college. Because I was thinking, I used to park outside that place when I couldn't get park in the Edinburgh College car park. I was you know, if you're coming down from, say, Silvernows, it's on the right-hand side,
about
a minute before you get to the college. But that's 100% where that one is. It's down Granton. I couldn't work out where Sick Boy is. That kind of the other side of Arthur's Seat, is it?
What? I'm trying to think. So,
I have no idea.
I thought it was down the bottom of the Easter Road. Was it? am I just like conjuring that in my mind? Maybe.
Which one for Sick Boys? What, early house or house in this one?
His house in this one, where he's like in the apartment block. I couldn't figure out where that was based. I was thinking that was maybe like the other side of kind of Arthur's seat.
Yeah.
I couldn't quite quote that. But I noticed today in the paper that there's someone's going to start doing an Edinburgh tour for Trainspotting, which makes sense. But
they've done that already, I thought. Yeah. Oh, not...
Well, I suppose it was just like, here's Waverley Station, Princess Street. Well, thank you very much. Hand in the
give me your jacket.
But I read it, they're going to do a running tour and they're charging £27 for it.
Shit,
it's like a 7 kilometre run where they're going to go to some of the spots in the kind of Leith and Arthur's Seat. So it's like £27 to just
really?
Walk around
just
a bit of Edinburgh, like totally...
Wow.
Capitalism reigns supreme there.
But if you're
stuff.
A fan, I suppose you'd go to New York and do the Sex and the City tour. Why wouldn't you come
but
to
But you can
Edinburgh
do those things, I think, kind of for free
yeah.
stuff. Like, you just
yeah.
need to Google Maps and stuff.
What
like,
basically saying is, why did we not think of this?
Yeah. I think everyone always thought, someone will do a train spot tour. It's just like, oh, we should have been on the ball with that. So we'll undercut it at like £20.
Yeah.
We'll get on the ball with that.
I wonder if that's snobbery, though, because is there the snobbery involved? Like you're saying, if... Your kind of thoughts of train spotting going backwards are like, oh, it was so romantic, it was so cultural, it was, you know, such pop culture. And then actually it is a really dark film about drug addicts
yeah.
and addiction and, you know, people screwing over their mates and someone dying. Maybe Edinburgh didn't really want to be associated with
yeah.
that, and that's why there was no train spotting tours. And now
yeah.
it's actually come back, they've all bought into
yeah.
it. And
I suppose
now
it's
like,
just as simple as that it was just like two spots in Edinburgh that was used, that
yeah, exactly.
kind of
that's
Princess
that's
Street,
that staircase
yeah,
down,
up
yeah.
at Frederick Street or whatever.
Yeah.
Or has train spotting become gentrified?
Well, I think it was. I think that's a theme definitely of the movie, that Edinburgh's gentrified, and the idea of the European Social Fund. Oh, here's some money. Leith,
yeah.
I love that. Leith 2.1.
yeah.
That, it's like Leith 1.1 of the movie. Kind of, it's approved now, 2.0,
yeah.
but this pub will make it 2.1. yeah. I thought that was quite fascinating. So, yeah.
I like the running film they had as well, of like the old mine workers.
Yeah,
and stuff
exactly.
Like that, yeah.
I mean, Ewan McGregor's acting was brilliant in that scene, so I was like, I'd give them 100
grand.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah
spot on.
Yeah,
it's 100
well.
Grand for your brothel pub.
Yeah.
yeah. yeah. So, what about.
Bed and breakfast.
Yeah, so what about Begbie then? What did you think of the return of the psychopath himself?
There were so many gags with Begbie, wasn't there? And I loved the bit where his son came out and you could just see him swelling with pride and he's like, ah, you're beautiful. It was just so fantastic
yeah.
to see him as this like suddenly proud dad, but not proud because his son was going off to college, proud because his son was good looking and tall.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no other reason. Yeah. You're going to join in with me, you're going to come out Robin and stuff.
Well, they softened them, didn't they, by seeing like, that's where Trainspotting comes from, you know, this his dad was the
yeah.
the alcoholic.
Yeah.
So they sort of softened the character.
Latterly though, because it took a
yeah.
little while for them to explain.
But then
that.
Like I said earlier, I think he became like Jason from Friday the 13th movies. I thought what one of the best characters it's been is because you can tell he's a friend of them, but everyone knows like a guy who's an absolute nutbag
yeah.
and he'll just go off on one at the smallest provocation. And I thought that was an interesting character, like how you can still be friends with someone like that. And then how you can actually be his wife and stuff
yeah.
like that, because there is some good in there, but he just like loses it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I think with this one,
depressed.
It became almost like a caricature, almost a bit pantomime.
Yeah, I think so. But especially towards like I could imagine him being bitter, hateful, and wanting to stab Renton
yeah.
for like that injustice. And like since then, he's kind of been in jail. It's all just stewed in his head. I could buy that, but it just felt a bit kind of. It wasn't the performance, it was just that kind of role. It was like kind of, you know, the Terminator, that moment
yeah,
where like,
exactly,
I refused
yeah.
to believe that he was running up and down those things with him.
Exactly,
thing
he's on
against...
top of the car and...
Yeah,
on.
Like he's got, you know, Renton is a guy that can run, we see that in the movie.
Yeah.
I don't think Begbie is anywhere close to being
no.
able to run
be
around.
100 yards
and
then he also
had like a knit and needle on his liver
yeah.
days before, so it's like he really recovered.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that was the biggest misstep in the film, actually, that sequence of him... chasing around the car park
yeah.
and with the, you know, he's on top of the car and
yeah.
But then you needed that to be able to get to that point where Renton has his, you know, his match shot of him slamming the car boot
yeah.
and doing the, you
yeah,
know, the cob on it and the manic.
But what would
I suppose you don't really necessarily need it though.
No, what would have happened is they would have met in a pub somewhere by accident
mm.
and then the whole room would have just went. And then they would have sorted out one way or another. That's how it would have happened,
but
rather than this sort
yeah.
of Terminator 2 kind of...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a bit... Yeah, that was a bit strange.
It's a shame because Robert Carlyle is such a good actor
oh,
as
yeah.
well. And you could probably tell he was like, really? Do you think we need to do this?
Mm-hmm.
because that's not the kind of character that Begbie was. I mean,
no,
sanctimonious, violent.
But then he was softening, and maybe that was his character coming to that point of softening and being able to go to mm-hmm. his son and going, and you know, leading up to why it's called Trainspotting.
Yeah,
and then being able to go to his son, you're going to be a better man than me. So you have to have that character progression.
Yeah,
for that I did like the fact that he still lies though, like. So when they're dropping off, and there's my boy, and he was, and he's like, "Dad, it didn't work like." No, it didn't.
Exactly. Yeah. And then he just like threatens him afterwards, like that. You do that again, like humiliate me. Like he really does have wee man syndrome. Like,
yeah. But there's good sort of nod to like the first film, you know, when so I'm playing pool and I'm on my and some boys like some poor guy just opens his crib.
Exactly.
But when they were writing the when Spud was saying the story, and he just loved the fact
he'd been put down as this,
and he was like. With the night, it was amazing that
that's
he really
probably
came
that romanticism as well of the first one. That this guy was a horrible, horrible guy.
Yeah.
And then it's like, it was funny. And then it's like,
he glassed some guy for no reason in the first film.
Exactly.
I mean, this is a horrible human.
He would have stole from his friends. He would have done anything to them, you know, to get ahead like that. Even the bit where he's like on the bus, I told you to bring the cards and all that. It's like
cares.
You could just like you'd be on edge the whole time.
Yeah, exactly.
Around
and they're always, shoot around, Frankie. And he just goes and he glasses that guy for no reason at all. And that's the character he is.
Yeah. And he looks to cause chaos that moment. He just chucks the glass over.
Exactly.
The girl's out.
Here.
Who's doing it?
Yeah.
Amazing every time. But it's, you know, I think.
And then they made him like some sort of lovable. So I thought that was the weakest sort of characterization in the sense that it lost the true nature of the actual character.
Uh-huh. And I think at the end of the movie, he's where he started. I think he's back in prison and stuff. And I do think that moment was really touching when he was like, oh. I never had the chances you had and stuff, and I think that summed up maybe Edinburgh of the past. That was what it was. And nowadays, that you can study any sort of course, anything you want. There's always
management.
There's always opportunities for people, and that's left behind a generation that missed out on that. They always had just smack or drugs to look forward to. Now this is a city where it's like the city of culture, a festival city. Anyone can be, you know, someone. There's something for everything. That wasn't probably there 2 decades ago. And you know, can you imagine that? Like, oh yeah, we were kids. What did we go do? We bought our first smack. And that's kind of, well, there's still probably an element of that in Edinburgh. I think that moment's gone.
Yeah. I think it's more aspirational now in the sense that, you know, gentrification brings aspiration.
Life is very different now though. And I think, like you're saying, back then you stayed in your little circle. You got a house next to your mum and your dad and your aunt, and you all stayed like that. But
plus people who grew up in the Brown flats didn't want to live there, so they got good jobs to move out there. That's I'm not decrying
but
anyone
the
who lives
who
there.
But then people who did live there, they were happy to stay there because their aunt was down the road or their mum was around the corner and their friends were there. So that's like little communities within communities. And then going to college was fancy to working class people back then, and even going back further. So that becoming attainable for lots of sort of, you know, youth back then was a big deal. And nowadays it's not so much, you know, like somebody like Renton or Sick Boy going to college would have been, whoa, what are they doing? You know, the highlight of those characters back then, he got a job in an estate agent, you know, which the estate agents was a good job because you earned quick money. So that's the difference, I think, in now that these kids are going to college and getting an education instead of taking drugs.
Yeah, there's hope in like bettering themselves as opposed to kind of swallowing in their own.
No, what they do is they just take different drugs at college.
Well, he even said,
I think they all drink Monster whenever I worked in education. So they've substituted smack for full sugar drink and all.
Well, that's what Sick Boy doesn't take heroin anymore. He takes coke all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
And that's
because he can afford. Yeah, and he can afford it, and he can operate on it. And that's why a lot of people, you know, you're talking about are at college taking coke now, right?
And
taking pills.
Right?
Or just energy drinks. They're taking coffee. We're a massive caffeine culture now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back then, you wouldn't have... If somebody said, come out for a coffee, you'd be like, what? But now you can go...
It'd be a different film mode with them, like, running after lattes.
Sitting in Starbucks having an espresso. Put me down for a double head.
Stealing cocoa beans.
That's a thing now, you know. That is a thing. We're a different culture. There's not so much geared towards alcohol. And... Education is responsible for that, and you know, in educating, I know my own children are so educated that alcohol is bad, you wouldn't even think about taking drugs. So you're looking at, you know, it's okay to go out and have a coffee or a milkshake and a froyo.
Yeah, they don't even think about smoking, do they?
No, they're very sort of almost venomously against it, but filling themselves with sugar drinks and My son is
activity, yeah.
It's like, I think Renan says, like, addiction, you know.
It's like,
just how you do it. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I'm addicted. No, you're just an addict. You just replace things with everyone else. You know, look at the room we're in. We were talking earlier, we buy the toys when we were younger. Like, we're addicted to maybe that nostalgia and getting back into it. Like, the things that we'll go do. Like, I love running, and you get such a kick from you. Like, oh, wow. Like,
I mean, I'm aware of a 40-year-old man buying a plastic version of Han Solo. And I'm aware of the
Kylo Ren you bought last week. Happily found him in the toy section.
How ridiculous that is.
We've got a child in our film, and I was like, oh, I was like, you buy him for the child as a thank you present. He's like, no, this is for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Poor car.
This is life.
Yeah. You're spot on there.
He chose life.
Exactly.
So, and this is the life he chose.
Yeah, so talking of, like, people that kind of, we were saying earlier, moved on with, like, what about Spud? You know, he was one at the beginning that looked like he hadn't really moved on.
Yeah.
What did you think of Spud, you and Bremner?
I thought Spud had such a great, he gave a really good name for, or not, name's the wrong word, but he gave a really good reason for people like him who have just stayed addicts. It's like, how are you still alive? And, you know, he was like, well, look, there's, you know, musicians out there who should have been dead 100 times over and they're still going. Some of us just potluck and, you know, you stay alive. And the way that his character arc, where at the end he was, you know, he kind of gave reason for Trainspotting back in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. He became
like
the
that.
Most important character, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I thought it was like a really clever device as well, just like 1 hour, like daylight saving. You're like, where are you going with this? And because of that,
then that happened,
then I lost my kid, then I lost my...
That was a brilliant...
I'd
completely forgotten about it until now and stuff, but that was a brilliant moment, just like,
really well,
all that farmer, is it?
Yeah, you're like,
good...
why are you going on about this?
Yeah.
But I thought that was superb. I thought he was brilliant as well, because he's like pantomime character, sort of, like, he's goofy exterior, he's clothing, which, by
his
the way,
eyes,
it must
bulging
be...
eyes
yeah.
as well, isn't
he? You can't dress... That badly well like he does, because I was looking at some advice that's going, ah, man, that looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, it cost like a fortune to actually dress. See, he didn't dress properly. I thought he was too cool dress wise but I thought his character was brilliant, because
he's an Edinburgh junkie. Everyone's got a bit of class in
Glamour.
He probably
exactly,
probably stole from Armstrong's or something like that.
Well, he looked like he still had the clothes on that he would have had back in Trainspotting, because why would he have bought anything new? He doesn't have the money. All his money goes on drugs. So as long as everything kind of could be washed and clean, then
it's like that when he says, "Oh, I left you $4,000." Well, what did you think I was going to spend on a junkie? Is that like he went $4,000? Like, he says and think, "Oh, I'm going to maybe buy an island or something like that." No, he went and spent it on drugs. He probably went to Brixton or something and just got us hit.
But even then, it got sort of the comedy out of the horribleness of it. So when he's like, He's done the overdose and he's killing himself, and then he's thrown up in a bag, and the whole cinema was like laughing their ass off.
Yeah,
because it seems at the beginning of the film,
if you roll that down, you go, someone tried to kill themselves and they're vomiting in the bag that they're tied. You go, this is, but I guess that's the skill of the filmmaker.
The visual
but,
gag of it as well.
And I think at the beginning you watch him and you think, oh, it's back to Spud's the comedy gag here.
Yeah,
and then he disappears for a wee while, and then he ends up like about the middle when he starts writing down these stories. It just the dynamic shift comes in, you think, oh, I didn't see that coming.
I thought
he was just going to be there in the background, and I thought, oh, once we get to the three mains, as it were, he's going to be kind of forgotten about. He's just,
but he's actually,
what
are
we going to do with
it,
Spud? We'll just have him dip in every so often.
Yeah.
Like, they made him the emotional heart of the movie.
Yeah, it was a really clever decision, I thought. It was, and the thing is, it was rendered really well because it was believable.
Because
you do believe that the voice he was writing in is his voice, and it was the voice of the movie as well.
Yeah.
So I thought that worked really well.
Yeah.
Really clever decision, wasn't it?
Reminded me of those, like, A Million Little Fibers sort of book. Like, I was kind of thinking at the end, like, when obviously there's the money, and it's like, they're going to invest it in making a book. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah,
I was trying to think what they were going to do. No, she just takes $100,000 to, you know, there becomes a betrayal. Oh, so if you sign it off to me, you'll all remain friends. I'll take the money. I thought, I was thinking, even till last month, I think, they're going to go publish this book, and that's what they're going to spend the money on. I don't know where that was going to come from.
Because
the book was Trainspotting, wasn't it?
The book was what it started. So it was nice that it came back to, like, the sort of writing in the beginning. And the whole thing with the money, where he went, don't give me any of it, I'm a junkie, I'm just going to spend it again. And, you know, it's that sort of circle. But I like the guilt that he had of being a father and his son sort of looking at him. And, you know, that's, I think a lot of kids could watch that and identify with their own parents now, you know, in sort of Edinburgh or anywhere where people are alcoholics or junkies and just get that sort of guilt. So that was that was a nice touch to it as well, that that doesn't make him not human, it doesn't make him not a nice person, it just means that he's an addict. And you know, he had that level to it, and it was nice to see him get positive there at the end.
And it was that moment where he's like, oh yeah, I know, and I'm an embarrassment to you. Now that, that letter to
that was really was sad, like, oh,
it was brutal and stuff. Like, when he was coming around the road, it was like, Jesus, oh, but man, you just wanted to hug him and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Because
yeah.
he's just that one of people, you, if you want anyone to be a success in the movie, it's him. And the others can take care of themselves. Like,
Spud's
that guy you want to put an arm around going, come on, you always believe that he
could.
That
was the thing, the whole, when they were reading the letter, the whole cinema went,
our cinema was amazing, actually, because there was a bit at the, there was a bit where everyone would be like bursting out laughing. And then when the film ended, everyone just went into like rapturous applause, and it was like, oh my gosh, I've been in like, you know, Star Wars and every kind of film that's come out, everyone's been sort of highly anticipated, even like Sex and the City with girls dressed up and everything, and I've never seen an audience act in the same way as they did to.
And this was like
two.
We went to the 6:20 showing,
yeah,
just not that they're all liquored up or something like that. It was
just the energy was just like, we've been waiting for this forever.
Because we had the similar energy at my screen. Mine was 6:25. But like, I felt more melancholy at the end and stuff. Like, when you've got that little montage to the beautiful Wolf Alice song. And you just seen like where the characters are, kind of, you felt like, oh man, it's like oh yeah.
I thought the opening, talking about that, I thought the opening credits were superb.
Yes.
When they're playing football and it's got, and it's got the kids that are just playing football and it's like identifying the characters. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I thought that was
just like the way it ended, I was like, oh, kind of ended on a kind of sad, melancholy, reflective note. And I like that. Whereas the first one ends on this kind of hope. And I think that's a realistic kind of ending, that we're only with these folk for about maybe a week or two.
Yeah.
And like, life isn't going to be so translational, that transcendent, that everything changes. And I thought that was kind of at the place of this, you know, there's been loss, horror, you know, all that thing. And it's like, oh, well, we'll find a way and stuff like that. And, you know, you have hope for Spud at the end. But it was just like seeing, you know, him kind of accept his mum's died and kind of where Sick Boy's at and everyone. You just
the end
of like,
acceptance, though, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing about it. Is they've accepted the fact that, you know what, we've chosen life and this is what life is.
Yeah, and it just makes you feel like, oh, that's nice and stuff. Like, and you feel that kind of, you know, that's probably what life is, as opposed to kind of like, oh, brilliant. You kind of think, oh man, it could be. That's life, you know.
But I think there's positivity in that as well, actually, coming to terms with the existence you're living. Because a lot of people strive for something that's out of reach and then they become miserable because they can't attain that.
That's what 20 years has shown.
Exactly. Whereas, in fact, it is about just going, this is what your life is.
And this is where I came from.
There's so many positive things in that, so why don't you embrace those rather than
try and run away from it? Because he was back in his teenage bedroom as a 40-year-old man dancing to a tune that he used to like make him so vibrant back in when he was in his 20s. And it's, I think there's that, if you are, because there was a lot of quite a few older couples like come to watch that movie, and I could imagine sort of their sort of thought process would have been, you know, that's happened to them, maybe they've got divorced and they're in their 40s now, and you know, you might have to go back to your parents at some point.
Yeah, because like in the 20s you always think, oh, this is where I'll be when I'm 40, and the fact that they're much and such where they are, and not much sometimes often happens in 20 years, and you see that, like, kind of going, oh, it makes you think and stuff, and reflect. And that's what I was thinking at the end, like, what happens in another 10 years? Will I be just kind of much such where I am? You know, will things necessarily move on and stuff? And I think that's an interesting note to kind of play on.
Yeah.
Is it even like an even more positive sort of, you know, you're saying at the end of the last one where it's like, choose life, choose this.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, ended on such a positive, and this was melancholy, but is that even sending a message to, you know, 20-year-olds watching that now and taking these films on board and going, 20 years down the line, this is what you could be doing. Mm-hmm. So get out there and make sure you know, do as much as you can. Don't screw over your friends.
Yeah, exactly.
Stay away from drugs and get out there and actually
really
properly
point,
choose life, you know?
It'd be quite interesting to show that to like a 20-year-old, someone young that's at the kind of age we were discovering, maybe like in our teens. Oh, watch this movie and see what they would respond
probably find
to.
Them embarrassing. Look at those old guys.
Yeah, like the sons. Oh, yeah, I know I embarrass you and stuff like that. Like, these guys are losers. Like, are they sitting there laughing? Like, not for me.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, like, kind of feel kind of almost come across as sexist, but I feel like we kind of talk about the female characters and we can almost just lump them in. Like, Gail, Diane, and Veronica, like, two of them had next to nothing to do, and Veronica, maybe a bit too kind of paper thin a character. What did you think of the females in this film? Carly, I'll go with you.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I connected massively with any of them because I think Trainspotting was predominantly a Mao film, wasn't it? You had the Mao, you know, characters. She was great. I liked her little story, the sort of story of her going back at the end, and she had a son to look after, and she was really striving. And I think that's quite indicative of lots of females who come over to Scotland and, you know, or the UK and, you know, try and earn money and to send back home because they have, you know, because they were saying, what is back home? And she's like, well, life, responsibilities and stuff. So I don't know. They never made enough of them. Of course they wouldn't, but was it the film that they should have been, you know, empowering women and making women the centre characters? I don't know. It wasn't that place for them.
I thought they were perfectly portrayed because it's a film about infant men, basically.
And
that's exactly how they viewed the women in their life. There was no...
Yeah. You've got that Trump-esque thing going on with the sort of thing, you know?
I mean, he slept with his girl... I mean, he's just got back with his friend after 20 years of betrayal, and he slept with his girlfriend. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of characters...
And she slept with him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's the kind of characters... These are the kind of men that believe women are like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I know it's a big debate in film and stuff like that, you know, about women being represented. I think it's the fault of writers not to write proper parts for women and not to write empowering parts for women. But you can't write a film with four junkies from Edinburgh and then have strong female leads because they're selfish pricks from Edinburgh who are on a caper movie.
Just be looking down at them the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. Or that's true to the characterisation because that's how they view women and that's how they behave. And to represent it otherwise, to have Maggie Thatcher in the middle there would
exactly. You don't want them lectured and all that sort of stuff. They find their own way. And it's,
what do you think?
I mean, I always think for kind of more for blockbuster movies, I think there should be more female representation.
No, I think
but
you're
for
right,
a movie
right,
like
yeah.
this, it works when you go along because that's what the movie is meant to be. It's not meant to be a movie that's flying a social justice flag.
No,
you would have spotted it a mile off. You'd have gone, you know, fuck's sake, Danny Boy, why have you like made that woman? Yeah, she wasn't and. So it's good that they did stay true to it.
I was surprised at how little Diane was in it.
I was shocked as well, the trailer scene.
I thought, here she goes. We're going to see her now all the way through to the end.
Yeah.
Oh, that was it.
Although I thought it was a good payoff. Like, she's too young for you.
Yeah, exactly.
That was really cool. But also, you look insane about women being represented. She was the most successful out of all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, she's
a
lawyer. She's charging this much an hour, a gulp kind of thing. Yeah. So. Fingers up to all the guys in the room.
The men come across as they're like infants. Mm-hmm. So I think that's more of it's a subtle credit to women.
Yeah,
Gail's ostracised herself from that as well. Like, now I've helped try to, I'm nothing to do with this, and to maybe involve her. Like, she's runs through that whole plot line of Spud.
Yeah.
And she thinks she gets a great, like, oh, I've got a good idea for your book. And that scene between her and Spud, you're like, your heart is breaking watching the two of them.
I've got the name. I thought of the title.
Yeah,
I love
it was
that
great.
Thing.
And I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then Veronica, she was an interesting enough character. She kind of pushes the plot along. And I think it's great that she just takes the money. And it's not a dramatic moment. And I like how they obviously both sleep with her. And it's not like a dramatic issue. Like, you slept with her and they fight all over again. It's just like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, they've probably done that many a time.
Yeah.
It's not the worst kind of betrayal in the world.
And she's the one that's sleeping with the two friends. I mean, let's put the power in her hands. Here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
She's played them all
for
chunks,
and
she made it look so effortless.
Yeah.
So talking of characters, what about the soundtrack? Like, the first soundtrack was probably one of the biggest sellers of all time.
Yeah.
Like, I'm still trying to remember some of it in my head. Like, I think that'll come with time.
Well, everyone had the Trainspotting soundtrack. It was like saying on the Graham Norton show the other day, and it was like everyone had that. You'd go to a party and everyone had the Trainspotting album and it would be played. But I like the use of music. I thought there could have been more again. I did come out of it wanting more, you know, but that's me as a person, a woman, you know, of course I want more. So I don't know if
Women. Back to the first.
But it's like,
we're not talking about filthy. We're talking about,
but like,
that was a good movie.
I thought there could have been more again with music. I thought I thought he left it so late. You didn't think so. We had discussed that, and you thought Lust for Life was perfectly timed. Mm-hmm. But I thought it should have been there at the beginning, but you like the little gag he made of it.
Yeah, when he puts it on.
Exactly,
it's
just straight.
I've been humming Perfect Day all weekend.
Yeah. the piano piece. But yeah, I think the piano piece is a perfect day, and I think they did a
I think that
piece
worked really well, actually.
Really good. And I think the soundtrack, it's like the same if you probably watched the first one for the first ever time, probably back in the day. You watch the film, and go, oh, that's a really good soundtrack. But it's when you think about it later, repeat viewing the soundtrack and listen
to it. Well, here's the thing, though. With the first one, it wasn't a soundtrack. It was the tunes we were listening to.
Yeah.
So it was just like a film that had the tunes we were listening
and
to.
And he said that, didn't he? Because he picked tunes of that time. And
so when we went to see it in the cinema, there wasn't like, oh, what's that? Or what's this? Mm-hmm. It was like, we already knew all the tunes. And it's interesting the fact that it's now become a thing, the soundtrack. Like, the poster's a thing. The soundtrack's a thing for Trainspotting. It's almost like compartmentalising like the nature of the film. Like, and that's what I was saying when we came out.
Well, you thought that he'd made...
I thought they'd just remade the poster.
Yeah.
Because that's what it felt like, you know. All that was encapsulated in the poster, they did in the film, I thought. You know, it had the same sort of vibrancy, but the same sort of reverential nature.
And taken away from that wasn't actually a dark film, but made glamorising like, the poster.
Yeah, whereas the soundtrack now had to... It felt... not the soundtrack, it's not human. The person in charge of the soundtrack... had to like be reverential to the previous one rather than just go, we're making a film, so let's just use the tunes that would fit this. So it had to have that sort of reverential nature. Definitely. Which it works in one way because, well, like nostalgia.
Yeah.
Nostalgia's a big thing these days.
And how many people still listen to the music of 20 years ago? Exactly. Like, I think I spent the past month re-listening to David Bowie for the millionth time.
Exactly,
Radiohead. Like, I'm not listening to necessarily new music, I'm just constantly going
tapping on emotions that you had previously. And there's nothing wrong with that, I think.
Even like discovering new music, my son said yesterday, he's like, have you heard of this band called Interpol? he feels like he's discovered them. He might be the only person
to me, like, it's just
this
new invention. And have you heard of Interpol?
I remember when you could pick up for £15 to see them in the liquid rooms.
I saw them in the liquid rooms,
And I think you listen to the soundtrack and you think it'll take time to truly bleed in and stuff like that. Whereas you watch a film the first time, and especially when you anticipate so much,
there's
you're overwhelmed
a lot
with everything.
Yeah,
And you don't have time to sit there going, oh, what's this song here? Oh, I'm listening to the lyrics. But I did love the Wolf Alice Silk song. I think that's a beautiful one.
Yeah.
And I think that really tapped into the emotion, and it's a very modern song as well. So it's like, it kind of lets that breathe, as opposed to, listen to a song maybe like Lust for Life, Perfect, and you think, oh, I know my own
kind of history.
That's maybe a bit disappointing there wasn't any Kanye West chucked in on that soundtrack, because he's such a thing of now. I am joking.
I just wanted to see
your faces, because you were like,
we can edit that part.
Exactly. The joy of an audio podcast means everyone's in there just going. And one last thing before we probably start to wrap up is, like, one of the main characters in the film is
Edinburgh.
Like, as Edinburgh people, how did you feel seeing Edinburgh on the screen and the places they used, the locations? You know, for me, the funniest part was they had filmed in Cav, a nightclub I spent my late teens in as a student. And I was like, oh, I recognise that. Oh, yeah. But I like how it was placed in, like, Nidri Street, where it's like the Hive. And I was like, oh, that's not Toll Cross. And then they come out and they run around Coburn Street down the road. I'm trying to work out the geography going, so they went run there to then go to that. And it's like, look what the farmer's market on top of that park. But it was quite, how did you feel seeing Edinburgh, like, on the big
screen?
Well,
the thing is, I remember I watched Newtown Killers, right? what's his name? He was a good director, but then he went off the rails. Can't remember the guy's name there. Used to do a BBC Two movie. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, Newtown Killers, and there's a chase scene in that around Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And you're like, so it goes from Sight Hill to like the grass market. Yeah. And it was, I remember sitting in the cinema going, this is terrible. Every other film must lie in the same way. So, like, I've not seen a real film at all.
Yeah.
So, then the same with this one, I was like, it's always brilliant to see your city, because we're like children at heart, so you swell with pride when you see, and you just live in a place. I mean, there's you add nothing to it at all.
Mm-hmm.
But so you're watching it, and I was like, you going, and your mind is just like swinging around.
Yeah, so what you can do is edit and go, they're doing that wrong. They never came out of there.
Well, that's down there, and then so you're like running around Edinburgh in your mind, just trying to. But
like
Edinburgh looks gorgeous, as it always does. She's a beautiful lady. I think they used it really well. It was it was lit really well. I thought they did that really well.
I would have really liked to have seen the movie not knowing Edinburgh.
Yeah, I always thought that when I was watching. I was thinking like, this isn't out till like March 13th in America. And I was like, just keep showing the good parts. I don't want people to go, oh, this is a beautiful city. I love a city.
Yeah.
And then watch going, that looks like a bit of a shithole. Look at the pits where the city's in.
It's funny you have pride in it though.
Ah.
Yeah.
But no, I thought it looked really good, and you do get a sense of pride seeing it, like the castle, everything like that. You know, you get to see Edinburgh more in swing than you do in the previous movie.
Yeah,
I couldn't work out where the Masonic Club was.
Yeah, we were trying to work out that as well.
Which one was that? The
death of all the Catholics.
That was so funny with the pin number.
Yeah,
well.
The 1690. Absolutely brilliant.
That was a great
game. I had a friend that watched that near Ibrox the other day, and one person said that he did hear someone shout "F the Pope" during the screening.
But I mean, that whole scene in that pub was like it reminded me of like an Inspector Clouseau movie or something like that. I mean, it was proper, like, broad.
That gave me really high hopes for the film, because it was so... And I was like, yes, it's going to be more and more like this. And I think that's where it reached its peak for me, and then it started to just level out, like, oh.
I felt like it felt out of place with the
rest really
of the
did.
Film. Like,
it
was just,
like
kind of slap... Like, I was thinking, going, why is no one... They're not even being subtle about stealing cards from people's wallets. And it was like, what?
And no one actually keeps their wallet in their jacket.
So
and then
trusting. Like, wow. It's like, mine's... I haven't got my wallet. I haven't seen it for 2 minutes.
But it felt like it was from another movie. But
in
its defense, though,
it
was a really good sort of small sketch in the middle of a movie.
Yeah, like you're watching, you're thinking, oh, you aren't from around, you think, oh, it's going to get violent. No, it just turns into a comedy
song
and dance, like Death to all the Catholics.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll be a common song for Rangers fans or something.
You're not
kidding. And that
one could have been anywhere, that... I don't know that location, but every time they sort of
I don't recognise it.
Yeah.
Every time they sort of said places that I knew, I did feel like, oh, I know that place. I know that place.
And like Arthur's Seat as well,
it's
so beautiful. Like I
it's
love
gorgeous,
running up there.
Yeah.
And I was like, people's like, that's like what you go run for.
Yeah,
I imagine like probably when I go for a run up it next week, it'll just be filled with more tourists
than
ever.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
like, this is where Ewan McGregor was, and I was like, oh, I never thought about maybe going.
Whenever
up
I have friends from
like
other countries that come over to visit. Always take them up there because it just shows the city.
It's
beautiful.
The badge of honour and stuff.
Yeah,
and see that up going,
that's
what you like to show people anytime. Oh, it's got Arthur's Seat. Arthur's
Seat.
And
now Trainspot 2 was there, so you know.
Exactly.
You can imagine, as it was like happening, that you could, like you're saying, that you can imagine tourists from everywhere standing in these shots, like, you know, thumbs up.
Oh,
and
definitely.
This is Trainspotting, and on that bit of Arthur's Seat, standing at the top, jumping up and down. How many, like, Facebook uploads is that going
to
happen?
I'm
going
to pose next to the cash machine in Glasgow
and
all that sort of stuff. I think it's right from like CC Blue or not CC Blue, whatever it's called. It's Katie's Bar. It's just right over there. You know, 1690. I thought, it was so good to see it on the big screen, and I'm looking forward to watching it again and just like picking up little.
Yeah,
I think you need to do that when something's so highly anticipated. Because we did it with Rogue One. We went to watch it and we were like, that was amazing. We came out like singing and dancing down the street. This was brilliant. And I think I had a chat with you and you're like, well.
Yeah.
And then we went to see it again and it was like, oh, you know, you're picking out even more. So it'd be great to go back and do that.
Because I think when you see
a
movie the first time, go either way. You've got so much anticipation and you're like, oh, it's brilliant, best film ever. And then you watch the next day, oh, well, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you watch some movies and I think like Force Awakens was one. I watched it and I was like, that was good. And then we'd watch it more times and thought, brilliant, actually. I love that. And with this, I was thinking, I came out really enjoying it. And the more I thought on it and the themes and some of the stuff it did, I was like, I love that more and I want to see it again.
What are you giving out of 10 then? What's your...
Well, I rate it out of 5.
Alright, you go for
so
5.
I suppose this is a good final thoughts time.
Mm-hmm.
I would go for 4 out of 5.
4 out of 5, yeah.
I mean, that may change in time once I've
what'd you
let see
it
breathe
again,
and stuff. You know, I think it helped that I kind of put myself into isolation from what it was. That I never had many kind of grand expectations of what it was or could be.
Yeah.
But I just really enjoyed it and I liked being back in that world again, and that wasn't what I expected. That it wasn't like, you know, Star Trek 13 or that you're fatter, you know, grayer. They just doing like it went for an interesting angle of like they've changed over 20 years, but they haven't really. They've just remained kind of bitter, and you know, they've had frustration with life. And I thought that was so realistic and interesting, and it played it down. It could have just been like a greatest hits in a way, and I think that it just tried to be.
It sort of
something
nodded to those,
true,
but it
yeah.
did really well, like not like falling into pure nostalgia.
Because we all kind of, that was that brilliant line, oh, I'm a tourist in my own nostalgia.
Yeah.
We all are. How many
yeah.
times when we like were catching friends, oh, I remember when we used to do this. And I was talking with my girlfriend one time, she went, oh, you're only ever telling me stories from when you're like your late teens, 20s.
Exactly.
And I was like,
what
can I tell you about like kind of being younger and stuff? Like, oh, the teenage kind of carefree abandon, oh, when we were at these clubs, like that kind of. You know, the PG-13 probably train spotting lifestyle. Oh, great night at the Liquid Rooms. Oh, I met with this girl or whatever. You know, you are in a tourist in that nostalgia.
Yeah.
And you're constantly listening to the same songs of those youth. You move forward a little bit, but you still keep going back to what it is.
I mean, Memory Lane is the most pounded street in the world. I mean, everyone always like.
Well, it's because for the last sort of 8 years, we've all been online. We haven't actually been off and done anything. Yeah.
But when we do stuff, it's all online anyway.
Yeah.
And all stuff.
So you're constantly reminded of it. And like, I think you can even get nostalgia for like last year. You know, you have that whole.
No one's got nostalgia for 2016.
Well,
I can.
No, yeah.
Everyone does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
God, I remember those days when Anton Yelchin and David Bowie died. I suppose with how the world is just now, it's actually looking pretty good.
Poor Anton Yelchin, I mean, he ran himself over in his own car. Jesus.
Aww.
He was brilliant as well. He would have been a... His career was going to be super
good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
We did a podcast talking about Anton Yelchin. So
oh,
there's
did
one
you?
For the,
no,
the
I,
books
I must
and stuff. We've,
that, yeah. I liked
future.
Him, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was had something for everyone. I think it had something for us in our 40s, looking back to our 20s, like yourself, you know, looking back when you'd sort of watched it. And like my son now, who only watched Trainspotting a month ago.
Yeah.
And who's gone to see Trainspotting 2 today. And it's like, I just hope he doesn't think, because there was a... I was like, oh, typical mum. Oh my gosh, it was a heroin scene. I hope he doesn't sort of think, oh, heroin's cool, because look how easy it is. They've just recovered.
He doesn't have any money. He's not going to recover.
But yeah, it's like, I think it has something for his era. You know, he's 17, and it's like, what is he going to make of Trainspotting 2?
I'd love to hear his thoughts.
Yeah, I'd like
yeah,
to.
Yeah, me too, actually. I'm only,
yeah. I'll let you know. I'll tell you
what. But what's funny, like, there was maybe 20 Spanish people.
Uh-huh.
All, like, obviously speaking Spanish, because of Spanish. You're like... And I wanted to know their thoughts. I was like, what? Because it was really enthusiastic.
They would
about
be tourists in the city, literally. You know,
but everyone's got a big Spanish community.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know what their love, because, I mean, this is like the first night it's out. It's the first show. And I wanted to know what that what the love of that would have been. I wanted to know.
There's quite a few Spanish people, actually, come think of it. When I popped in on Saturday to pick up some tickets from the Cameo, and there was like Spanish people there, I was like, oh.
It must be massive in Spain.
Exactly. They're just like, it's probably like poverty porn for them. Like, ah, look at those Edinburgh people shooting themselves up and stuff. But so is there any other final thoughts you've got on Trainspotting?
No.
Or will we do get back together in 20 years and go, so what do you think 20 years on from Trainspotting 2?
That'd be
stuff?
Interesting, yeah.
I wonder if they will do.
Well, there's talk
they'll
of
leave
a,
it alone.
They have mentioned a third.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll leave
I
it alone.
I don't know if they'll go back to that.
But then I thought there was a great setup there as a story writer. You could actually just see Begbie's son, what's he doing, going into hotel management. What's Sick Boy got? A hotel.
Yeah, there you go.
Trainspotting 3, ready to
and
go.
Here, well, let's go Met here. So there's Trainspotting, which inspires like Spud's stories, which inspires Trainspotting. So like you could watch Trainspotting, watch T2, read the book, then watch the film adaptation and think, oh, that's the adaptation of Spud's book, which was based on his experience in Trainspotting 1 and 2. It'll just be like one of those ones where you need like the posters and the lines and stuff like that. Like you've got this timeline and this like that. Maybe I'll do a podcast one day where I just have the weird timeline put together. Exactly.
Yeah. It's cool. Hopefully, it'll encourage people to go back and actually read books because, you know, as a writer, two writers sit here in the room. It's like you want people to read. You want that. We love writing. We love to write, and you want people to have that passion as well.
Yeah.
So hopefully, it will encourage those people to go back and search out Irvine Welsh's books and look at his stuff and just sort of discover.
If Spud can write
whole,
as well, then so can everyone.
And exactly.
I hope it makes people who make movies go right. If I'm going to make a sequel, this is how to do one properly.
Yes.
Because, I didn't think it was a perfect movie in any way whatsoever. I thought, if you're going to do a sequel, this is probably the best way you can do it. And then I hope people, like, if they can't do it that way, then don't bother making money.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because I can't watch another shit sequel.
No, I can't take any more.
My eyes!
I know.
Yeah. I think it was great. I thought it had something for everyone.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh,
it's
well,
been a
yeah.
total pleasure.
You.
If people wanted to reach out to you and share their thoughts on Trainspotting, where could people... find you and interact with you online?
Down at the train station.
Yeah,
actually, Trainspotting.
Yeah.
We'll
be at the Cav Night Club.
I'll be at Salamander Street 11 till 1 most nights.
So, we'll actually come and check out our film, The Admiral, which should be coming online in April. So keep an eye on for that. As I am still Carly online, you'll find me like that. Ross is absolutely a complete utter technophobe, has nothing online at all.
Send me
a
letter. Send me a letter.
Send him a pigeon.
Yeah, I'm one of those pompons.
But yeah, look out for our film.
Yeah.
And then
we'll maybe get you
and...
on again to talk about your movie when it comes out.
That'd be great. You can come and see it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get you on and you can review your film.
Happy 5 stars across the board.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there we go.
No, shit, 3 out of 5.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a real pleasure, and let us know your thoughts on Trainspotting 2 when you see it in like 2 months' time in America, or if you've seen it this weekend in the UK. So thank you.